Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another lights on listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. Warning. We have learned that some liberals choke on even a small piece of Pastor Scheidbach's mind. The devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor of the Lighthouse and your brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage.
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic, a gourmet meal for the mind.
Oh, Israel, Israel. Why would anyone suppose Israel is the aggressor in the Gaza situation? Reminds me of when I was a kid and my little brothers would annoy me until I finally got angry enough to retaliate. No matter what they did to provoke me, it did not matter. I was the oldest and I was the biggest, so I was the one that was wrong. I couldn't win. It's a mom thing, you know. So I learned to live with the foul injustice of it, and of course I took my turn often enough. Har, har. And you might even think the analogy works, that the big brother should tolerate the tyranny of the little brother because these are brothers, after all, in a squabble that goes way back to a very ancient hatred between the descendants of Ishmael and the descendants of Isaac. You know the story? No? Well, didn't any of you ever go to Sunday school? God promised Abram a son. After 15 years or so of trying, Sarah apparently decided God needed some help. She said to Abraham, "Take my handmaid, lay with her. The baby born to you from her will be our child." Now that was the ancient surrogate mom program of 1900 BC. It worked. Hagar, that was the surrogate mother's name, conceived and brought forth a son, and he was named Ishmael. And he became the father of the Arab people. Hagar had a hard time letting go of her child. Serious tensions developed between Hagar and Sarai, and there was no peace in Abraham's tent, let me tell you. Later, when Ishmael was about 16 years old, God visited Abram again and explained that Sarah's surrogate mom program was not what he had in mind when he promised an heir to Abram. He explained Sarai would conceive and bring forth the promised heir. This happened, and Isaac was born about a year later. He became the father of Israel. Now, as you might expect, Ishmael, the father of the Arabs, resented the baby Isaac because he would be Abram's heir instead of Ishmael. Sarai and Hagar, no doubt, exchanged a whole lot of stink eye between them. And finally, Sarai had enough, and she let Abram know she wanted Ishmael out of the camp. She did not trust the young man she before attempted to take as her son. Abram sent Hagar and Ishmael away. God settled on Hagar, the lion's share of the promised land, by the way, but settled the promised seed upon Isaac. God reserved enough of the promised land to Isaac, at least to provide a place in the earth for the promised seed, but, frankly, he gave most of the land to Ishmael. Now, history seems to suggest that these brothers lived in relative peace, and then came Muhammad. And Muhammad stirred up the old hatred. Now, you might think that it is fair that the bigger and the older brother should bear the burden and take the blame. And if you do, well, then Ishmael must take the blame since he is the older brother. But that's not fair because Isaac grew up to be bigger and stronger than Ishmael, right? Well, that's actually not true either, at least not with regard to bigger. But I guess when it comes to stronger, if you measure it by military might, well, okay, Israel loses because she is stronger. So it's fair, right? Well, by mommy logic, you might think so. The problem is that the provocation from my brothers was not a life or death proposition. I mean, my brothers were not lobbing missiles into my room or shooting me with AK-47s that they procured from Russia, har har. They were not kidnapping my children and torturing them to death. They were not sending their children or the neighbor's kids to my house wrapped in explosives, screaming, "Allah Akbar," as they blew themselves and my kids to eternity. Can you believe the childishness of the Obama camp and the general anti-Semitic Arab community. Can you believe how infantile are these people who think Israel is supposed to allow itself to be shot at constantly, threatened constantly, attacked, terrorized, menaced, invaded, assaulted, forced to live every day in fear for their lives? But because they are stronger, they are wrong to retaliate, even if only to defend their children? Israel is the bully? A skinnier, but otherwise equal in size, at least with regard to height, kid attacked my son. Came at him swinging, landed a few glancing blows, raging like one of those really frightening little dogs, you know the ones I mean, snarling through bared teeth with a blood-red tint in its eyes as they bulge with fierce determination and malicious intent. Framed by furrowed, twitching brows, this kid, like this dog, though comical, raised every alarm of serious threat and simply had to be dealt with. My son quickly turned him around and put him in a chokehold, didn't take him out, but set him on his derriere, sucking air, trying to regain his focus. And whatever dignity he thought he was protecting, Mommy was outraged, blew her top, freaked out, went ballistic on my boy. You know, mommies think like that. I get it. I totally understand. Mommies always side with her own, right? I get it. Mommies look at two kids in a fuss, and the bigger kid is a bully, period, end of discussion. Or the other kid, you know, if her own is involved. Dads are different. The dad says, hey, what did you think you were doing flying into this guy like that? What did you think he was going to do? If you attack someone, you'd better have a good reason for doing it, or at least you had better be able to back it up. In this case, the kid didn't have a good reason, and he couldn't back it up. Better have a good reason, and you better be able to back it up. You know, that's what my dad taught me, among other things, like how to fish, drive a go-kart, and a boat, identify tourmaline, and distinguish it from petrified wood, and oh, fly a whirlybird, and oh yeah, track the stars, and there's a whole lot more. But he said, never pick a fight, and if you do, have the good sense to pick one you can win. Dads think differently than mommies. Had some trouble with some kids in the hood when I was a youngin'. A couple of kids pulled a knife on me and a friend. When Mom found out, she went looking for them. Dad listened to the whole thing very carefully, and then he gave me several pointers on how to identify in your surroundings what he called equalizers. Then he talked to me about how to use them. That a rolled-up magazine, or the stiff end of a newspaper, a book, of course a stick, or a brick, or a handful of gravel with some good-sized stones can provide useful defense and can be used as a formidable weapon in the hands of someone with a plan. Oh, and what was Mom going to do if she caught up with these guys? Well, she would give them a good talking to. Of course, if Dad went after them, well, you see, it would have been different. Mommies give you a good talking to. Dads teach you how to war. Obama is handling this matter like a mommy going after someone who pulled a knife on her son to give them a good talking to. But this is even worse. In Obama's case, he's giving Israel the talking to. Because you see, for Obama, he sides with Ishmael against Israel for the same reasons a mommy sides with her son, no matter if he's in the wrong. Obama sides with Hamas because they are his people. Israel is not. He is treating this conflict like a mommy angry at someone hurting her boy. The enemy is anyone hurting her son, period. What he did to provoke the hurting is irrelevant. Stop hurting my son, that's all. Obama's a mommy president. Maybe that's why he throws a ball like a mommy, looks prissy on a bike, and wears mom jeans. Oh, brother. Oh, my goodness. But really, I've never seen a president throw a ball like this guy does. It's weird. And that picture of him, you know, with his bike helmet sitting in a posture that was just way too correct. Everybody knows you're leaning forward a little bit. Your back's not that straight. Yeah, it's not like you're riding one of those, you know, prancing horses in a parade. Come on, what's with the mom jeans anyway? But hey, so he throws a ball somewhat awkwardly. It's not his thing, right? Okay, rides a bike like his dad just pushed him off on his first ride. Okay, fine. And he likes those jeans that just happen to look like what they call mom jeans. I don't care, so what? You never heard me say anything about all that before because it didn't matter to me. It would never have made the show, except that, well, now it's actually germane to a serious and important point, an observation that needs to be made about how this president conducts himself in office. Obama's a mommy president. You know how they used to say Clinton was our first black president? In the same way, Obama may be said to be our first woman president. I mean, it's the sort of thing I would likely have left alone, but now he's picking on my people. And he's acting like a mommy about it. Hamas has had it coming. They've been begging for it. What did they think Israel was going to do? They've been raining missiles into Israel by the hundreds. What is wrong with you, Mr. President alleged? How can you possibly take the side of Hamas? How dare you call for Israel to show restraint? Where are the calls for Hamas to show restraint? By the way, this is not the only way Obama's presidency is like having a mommy for president, but we'll have to save that for another show. I wonder, is this preparation for Hillary? I'll be right back.
Ask 100 churchgoers what connects them to their church and you'll get many different answers. Most, however, would not mention truth as their number one concern. Why? For many, church is about opportunities for socializing or family tradition, and the issue of truth is taken for granted. There's something wrong when a nation boasts 78% of the population is born again, with many of the largest churches in history, and yet we are in a moral freefall, and Christianity is increasingly held in contempt. Think about it. Want to help us slay the dragons of deceit with the sword of the Spirit? Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com and make your donation today, or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457. Compromise of personal preferences or self-interests to serve some higher good is honorable, but some think compromise is the answer to all disagreements. A dispute between two women over who was the mother to a baby was brought to Solomon. He ordered a compromise: have the baby divided and give each mother half. Obviously, some things allow for no acceptable compromise. In those cases, compromise only works to the advantage of evil. For example, instead of obeying the Lord and coming out of an apostate church, you compromise the truth. Why should our children respect our beliefs if we don't? Something to think about. Call 347-9887 or go to santamarialighthouse.org for more information. Pastor Scheidbach is charging the gates of hell. Don't leave him hanging. Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com to make a donation or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457. Devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse, your brain masseur, and Paul Revere's lantern lighter. Lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, singling the enemies on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties. I'm in Canada, presenting a prophecy conference to the Harvest Baptist Church in Langley, British Columbia. Pastor Getty is a gracious host, and the staff here have just been way over the top helpful, accommodating me and doing everything. I mean, I won't even go through all that they had to do to help me be able to prepare and present this show for this weekend. You know, the big event here this time of year is the Gay Pride Festival. I understand it is the largest of its kind in Canada, possibly in the world, taking place in Vancouver even as I prepare this show. If you caught the first segment of the Brain Massage, you remember that I pointed out the gender confusion problem we're having in the White House right now. And of course, I mean psychologically, not physiologically, although I did read some who are saying they have reason to believe, or they think they have reason to believe, Obama and Michelle are both transvestites. Oh, brother. Oh, my soul. That nonsense is out there. But psychologically speaking, I'd say they both behave like women. I don't want to go back there just now, but the Brain Massage Inside Explosion coming in a few minutes requires us to review what we have watched develop in our respective countries over the past 20 years. We are routinely exposed to the spectacle of men with men and women with women doing that which is unseemly, although they have backed off a tad since, I believe, they've noticed how quickly their audience is turned off by this still considered aberrant behavior. It's one thing to talk about all this in the abstract, where you can cast it in terms of human rights, you know, someone's personal private business. And in our do-your-own-thing values culture, it all resonates positively. You know, but stick it in their faces, rub their noses in it, or in other words, put it in front of them, two men making out in bold relief against the backdrop of normalcy, and the general public gets turned off. Repulsed, and no matter how hard they may try to act like it's all cool and no problem, they'll turn the channel, walk away, lose interest in that series, you know. It's just not fun to watch this on TV or at the movies or to see it in the streets. People don't like it. They. Now, you remember who that is, don't you? The children of disobedience under the control of Satan, who are servants of the Dark Lord. They want to force this on you, so they say you don't like it because you are homophobic, you know, afraid of homosexuals, or that you are bigoted, or that you are a hater. All of which, by the way, is said in as bigoted and as hateful a manner as may be. It cannot be that you simply, naturally, don't like it. It has to be that you're a hater. Recently, I was invited to sushi. I declined the invitation. Don't like sushi, so sue me. I don't care for sushi. So what's happening is the movie industry has figured out that folks just don't like this stuff. They don't want to put it in their faces. The viewers don't want to see this in a direct way because people who have a broken moral compass are fine with it in the abstract. Doesn't mean they're going to be okay with it and accept it in a concrete, in their own personal living reality. When it comes to putting it into their faces, not so much. The same thing happens with abortion in the abstract, you know, when you can talk about it in terms of a woman's rights, privacy, and so forth. Well, many people are okay with that. I mean, they're a little ambivalent about it, even if the practice makes them uncomfortable. But, you know, bring it home to them. Show them the reality of it. Put the reality of this butchering of a child in the womb in front of them. Well, it's a different picture. In the abstract, you see, rather than in the concrete. Anyway, we have come to the place where our governor in California makes it a law that children can choose their gender. That's odd. Gender is at least as fixed in our physiology as is our ethnicity. So why can't someone choose their ethnicity? I mean, if you're applying for an aid or some other government handout limited to certain ethnic groups, why can't you simply declare yourself to be that ethnicity? I mean, how about the Indians and the land grants given them? Why can't someone simply write down whatever tribe they want to on the application? If you can choose your gender because of how you feel inside about yourself, why can't someone feel African or feel Asian or feel Hispanic or feel Anglo or whatever? I'm surrounded here by a bunch of wonderful Filipino people, and they make me feel Filipino, but that doesn't make me Filipino. Or to put the question another way, a way that will help you not get stalled in the process of getting the point, would the legitimate Indians buy the argument, I mean, the truly ethnic Indians, would they buy the argument that because something inside you feels Indian, that you should then be taken seriously and given your cut of the land? I don't think so. There is no way anyone would buy that argument for any other kind of claim to be physiologically something other than what you manifestly are. No one will succeed attempting to tell you they simply identify as a dog, and so we should allow them to claim that they are a dog, and if they do some kind of a dog thing, like bite you, that they should be handled like a dog would be. Oh, that might not work out too good, because sometimes they'll execute those dogs, put them to sleep. I'm thinking about that that soccer player fella. Anyway, so, you know, we should allow them to claim that they're a dog because they feel like one? And no one's going to buy a naturally blonde-haired, fair-skinned, blue-eyed gal who claims she's actually a black male. We will tell children that their gender is determined by how they feel inside themselves about their sexuality. Consider what is going on in this crazy world. The California governor proclaimed students can decide their gender classification. We make holidays for people whose sole contribution to earn the honor is that they were homosexual. Now, thinking of Harvey Milk, of course, a fellow who likely should have been arrested and tried for statutory rape, having homosexual relations with a minor. But, you know, Harvey Milk was killed by a flipped-out crazy guy over being passed over for a promotion. And so we turn Harvey Milk into a hero, and we honor him with a holiday, which is essentially a celebration of his homosexuality. Now, how about we have a holiday for a heterosexual? You say, well, we have many holidays for heteros. Really? I don't remember ever be celebrating any holiday where the person's heterosexuality was made the focus of the celebration. But when milk is talked of, his fame is directly connected to his sexuality. We usually don't make holidays to honor someone who is an average Joe like you or me. You know, we don't set aside days to commemorate the life of someone unless he's unusual, unique, extraordinary, or otherwise heroic. And the only thing unique about Harvey was that he was a homosexual. That's it. So what are we actually celebrating when we honor Harvey Milk Day? We're celebrating homosexuality, and that's the point. We have been pushing gender confusion, blurring the distinctions between the sexes for many years, going all the way back into the 20s with the whole girls wearing hair like men thing, and then the 60s when the men started wearing the hair like the women, and then today where you get men with men and women with women, working that which is unseemly, as the Bible says. And you say, well, we've had homos all along. Yeah, about 3% of the population of any given generation will show symptoms of this disorder. And it is a disorder. This aberration from the norm, this unnatural behavior, this behavior that's contrary to the course of nature. But what is different is that now it's being promoted. The difference is that the stigma against this behavior is being purposely removed from our culture. And this is coming on the heels of a very long effort to undermine the natural stigmas that have raised up in culture and have worked in many cultures to protect the individuals within the culture and the family units in that culture and the society at large. For example, consider the old stigma of a loosey-goosey gal. Remember that? Remember when loose girls were considered tramps or otherwise ostracized from decent society? Remember when it was considered shameful for a guy to take advantage of a girl and then move on to another? Remember when such men were considered predators and cut off from any good society? Now it's reversed. The chaste girls are mocked, ridiculed, thought of as strange, odd, and in many cases, they become the targets of open ridicule and even hostility. Guys who go about bragging on their conquests are admired. I mean, it's actually disgusting, but worse, it's damaging. The stigmatization against unchaste behavior protected us from all kinds of things, among them the scourge of the bastard child. And I'm using the word biblically, not as a curse word. I did an entire show a while back examining Obama in the context of him being a bastard child, as he is. He grew up without a father figure, and it's very sad. I have seen the effects of this in my own dad, by the way. Many of the attitudes and behaviors we see in Obama are directly connected to this experience in his life. But I don't want to go back there. The stigmatization of unchaste behavior served to discourage behavior that results in the overpopulation in our society of kids growing up without fathers, which is a negative thing. I mean, we know for a fact they are much more easily manipulated than a self-assured man, comfortable with himself and around others, typical of a well-fathered child. And yet at the same time, they are angry with a deep-seated resentment toward anyone outside their immediate circle, rather like a pack animal, you know? And being as they are controlled by their own anger, they are more susceptible to being manipulated and managed by others through their anger. But the stigma of unchastity served to discourage behavior that produced bastards with all the confusion, heartache, misery, and so forth that this produces. And we know it is a primary contributor, for example, to poverty, to all sorts of criminal behavior. It produces easy recruits for gangs. Not to mention all the problems this creates in the immediate family as they deal with all this. Unchaste behavior also promotes diseases. 3 million teenagers contracting a sexually transmitted disease every year should horrify you, but most don't really stop to consider what it means. I mean, these diseases cause problems for these kids down the road, sometimes showing up in their children, sometimes making them vulnerable to other diseases that cut their life short. However, it's promoted in our culture, and in the abstract, it looks fun. It looks like it's the beer commercials that associates drinking with fun and family at the beach, you know, or the lake or the mountains or buds watching football, but they never cut to the scene of the drunken father coming home and terrorizing the children or the wife or the fatal car accident involving someone who had one too many for the last time or for the many hundreds of thousands who die of alcohol-related physical issues every year. They don't sell booze to people on TV by filming Skid Row as the background or the backdrop for their commercials, and they keep it in the abstract, the evil of prohibition, you see, interfering with your right to have access to alcohol and all the fun you have when you're on a buzz. Okay, well, obviously you seem to be comfortable with that, at the social cost of all this, so who cares, right? You know, same thing here. We're going to jump all over tobacco because it kills people. We're not going to bother King Alcohol, even though it kills people too. Anyway, TV promotes sexual relations outside of marriage routinely, always keeping it in the abstract. And that's the point. You getting it? Avoiding the down and dirty concrete reality of it all. But you see, we live and experience it there, don't we? I mean, the alienation felt by the young lady who gave herself to some boy who wanted nothing to do with her after. The inability of the young man to bond to his bride later because of so many prior liaisons. He can't even relate to his wife properly. And the problems go on and on and on. But So long as it's thought of in the abstract, you can control it there. You can paint it with whatever colors you like. You can manipulate the images in the abstract. But you bring it home into the concrete reality of real life, well, it becomes something else altogether. The point is that the stigma against homosexuality served to discourage the behavior, and society has plenty of reason to want it discouraged. It is disease-ridden. Like abortion, you don't like it so much when you are exposed to its reality. Same thing true here. This behavior is so vile and physically unforgiving. I saw a video. It was cute. We need more like it. If you're going to play, you're going to pay. That's true. Someone's beginning to get it, and good for them. It's also true of homosexual behavior. If you're going to play, you're going to pay. So you see, it's about removing the stigma, making it easier for the enemy of our children to get at them. It's all about getting to the children. We used to labor to protect our kids. Now we feed them to the lusts of Moloch, and we throw them into the fires of Chemosh. Like the pagans of old who fed their children to the appetites of the gods they served, we serve the god of pleasure and we're feeding our children to that god. The farther along the path away from God we go, the more vulnerable we make our children. We need to stand up, say enough of this, and rebuild the moral borders that in the past protected our children. I have lit the lamps in the church belfry arch, and now you let me know you see that they are on. Say lights on when you call. 1-888-770-8000. If you agree with what I'm saying and you're with me in this fight for the soul of America, you call and say lights off if you disagree with me. And the number you call is 1-888-770-8000. Now, if you prefer to email me or you want to contact me from outside the country, use our website. Go to thebrainmassageshow.com. That's thebrainmassageshow.com. You'll see on the right column there a place where you can put in your name and your email address, and then write to me as long a letter as you like. If you're in a hurry, just give me lights on or lights off when you call, and then hang up. But if you will, please leave me a message. I love to hear from my audience. I appreciate it when you give me your feedback. So please call 1-888-770-8000, and repeat callers are welcome, by the way. God bless you. God save America, and I'll see you in church.
King David wanted to bring the Ark of God into Jerusalem. God's prophet encouraged him and told him it was God's will. For this very special project, David commissioned the building of a brand new cart to carry the precious Ark of God. As they rolled down the road, they hit a bump. To keep the Ark from falling off the cart, the driver reached out and touched it. This brought death to the driver. David became afraid of the Lord. He sent the Ark away and he went home troubled. Later, David understood from the scripture that the only proper way to transport the Ark was for the priests to carry it. He decided to try it again, and this time he did it according to God's instructions, and everything worked out beautifully. David was a good man with good motives, but his plan was flawed. Many good men with good motives are attempting to do a good work, but they're doing it the wrong way, and it has brought spiritual death to our churches. Are you in a new cart church? Come to an old path church this Sunday. Call 347-9887 or go to santamarialighthouse.org for more information.
Ask 100 churchgoers what connects them to their church and you'll get many different answers. Most, however, would not mention truth as their number one concern. Why? For many, church is about opportunities for socializing or family tradition, and the issue of truth is taken for granted. There's something wrong when a nation boasts 78% of the population is born again, with many of the largest churches in history, and yet we are in a moral freefall and Christianity is increasingly held in contempt. Think about it.
Want to help us slay the dragons of deceit with the sword of the Spirit? Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com and make your donation today, or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457. For a complete brain massage experience, tune in Saturdays at 7:30 a.m. The Brain Masseur is preparing to massage your brain